The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I am your host, Herschel Finman. We have a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be doing an archived edition featuring an interview we had last year with Ms. Elsie Shemenroth, the daughter of William Roth, who was a Jewish veteran from World War I who was denied the Medal of Honor, and she fought rigorously for it until President Obama actually acquiesced to her demands. We've got a wonderful collection of music. The portion of this week is the portion of Mishpatim, which means laws, which is what this portion has. Lots and lots and lots and lots of laws. And it's found in the book of Exodus, chapter 21. We have a wonderful story at the end concerning the Rebbetzin Chaya Mushka Schneerson, whose yahrzeit, the anniversary of her passing, is celebrated this evening. She would have been 116 if she'd been alive today. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Shalomit Krigman, age 23, died from her wounds after she was attacked while shopping in a market in Beit Haron. That's located between Hebron and Efrat. The two Palestinian terrorists who attacked the woman were shot dead by the store security guard. Eight Hamas terrorists were killed when the smuggling tunnel they were rebuilding collapsed. The tunnel was located less than a kilometer from Israel. The Palestinian Authority arrested the brother and son of a Palestinian Arab who sold two houses to Jews in Hebron. The family was told that they, the two people who were arrested, would not see the light of day until the person who sold the houses turned himself into the Palestinian police. Were he to do so, he would likely be tortured and possibly executed, the punishment under Palestinian Authority law for selling property to Jews. As a growing number of European countries report Zika infections from people coming back from trips to Latin America, Hebrew University's professor of epidemiology, Dr. Haggai Levine, says that Israel has nothing to worry about as there are no mosquitoes in Israel that carry that virus. He did urge people visiting infested areas to take precautions against bites and recommended that pregnant women not travel to those countries. You can type in Zika into your browser and see what countries it's in. It's spreading, and it's pretty nefarious. It hasn't killed anybody, but who wants to get sick? And finally, here we go again. In a highly secret operation, Israel negotiated the return of a vulture accused by the Lebanese as being an Israeli spy. The bird was wearing a tracking device as it is part of a program to boost the Middle East's dwindling vulture population. To date, Arab states have captured dolphins, sharks, ducks, vultures, eagles, and rare European bee eaters as Zionist agents. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. 358-9000 or visit them on the web at spexhoward.edu. Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Hey, Schulfen, and here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Mrs. Elsie Shemin Roth, who we're going to talk about her father, Sergeant William Roth, and his receiving posthumously the National Medal of Honor. How are you today, Mrs. Roth?
I'm doing very well, Rabbi, and you?
Thank God, thank God. We're doing very, very well. Well, tell us about your dad. Why was he awarded? What did he do to get awarded the Medal of Honor from President Obama this month?
Okay. Well, the enlistment age in World War I was 21. My father was actually 18, and he wanted to go. He really wanted to honor our country by serving in the military. He was first generation from immigrants. His parents came from Russia. They were offered a wonderful home, professions, and they thrived. And he wanted in some way to pay back. But what could he do? He was 18, and the age was 21. So he told his parents that if he didn't sign for him, that he would never come home again. And he meant it. So begrudgingly, my grandfather did sign for him. So you have this 18-year-old going in saying that he's 21 years old. Actually, from the time he went in until the time he went to the front to actually engage the enemy was 7 months. That's it. Mm-hmm. He went to Camp Green where they took their basic training. 7 months later, he was in France. And it was horrendous fighting, brutal, brutal fighting for this teenager. And on the occasion, the actual citation generally says, and I'm not reading it in front of me, but on three different occasions, when the sun was shining and there was no cover and there was heavy machine gun and rifle fire, he crossed an area of 150 yards to pick up three of his wounded comrades each time, going and bringing one back, then bringing him to safety, doing the same thing again, and yet doing the same thing again. And upon his return, the third time around, the platoon that he was with had wounded all of the officers, and non-commissioned officers were either dead or wounded, and there was no one to take charge of this platoon. In this case, the platoon was about 30 men. He then took charge of the whole platoon, led them all to safety. Now, he could have finished right there, but he didn't. He turned around and went back again to engage the enemy. And the next day, they found him unconscious. He was shot in the head, right behind the ear, and had shrapnel throughout his back. He was then brought to the hospital and remained there for at least three months.
Wow.
That's the citation.
Wow, that's pretty incredible that he would do such a thing.
Yes.
So did your dad tell you these stories when you were growing up?
Oh, no. Never once. There are three of us in the family. I'm the oldest of three. I have a brother, who's now deceased, and my sister. And we always remarked, he always talked about the Army and what life was like in the Army and his friends and the various activities and things, never once. And you knew to stay away from the topic. If you asked just even a little bit of a question that kind of edged on this action, you would always, there would be an answer that, you know, didn't quite make sense or a topic would be changed. It was just for his whole life, and this is par for the course with anybody that has seen horrendous action, especially at such a young age. He was 19 when this happened. It was too painful, much too painful to ever be spoken about. I know what I know from what I read. That's it. It was written down what exactly the citation was.
These were official military accounts of the battles?
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. That is the official military account, because there were five people, five soldiers, that actually saw the action. That's the reason that my father was able to get the Medal of Honor. You have to see, and it has to be an officer. In World War One, an officer had to see the action. And this was something that always bothered my father. He said, I mean, nobody stands there and watches. You're in the middle of a battle, and this is not about medals. And that was a very big thing with my father, never about medals. But somebody has to see it and then recommend you. In my father's case, this was so amazing with what he did on the three occasions, and then saving 30 more, and then going back to battle, that there were six different three officers and three enlisted men vouched for what he did and wrote it up. So when we were eight, and my father saved the paperwork, which was a military, on military stationery, that's what got him the Medal of Honor. There are so many people out there that did amazing things, as amazing as my father, that never could be recommended because they didn't have the paperwork. There was no, you know, it was just hearsay. And the Army, of course, would not allow that. And in my father's case, he was given our nation's second highest award, but he was given that because there were too many people that saw the action. Had none seen the action, my father would have gotten nothing, absolutely nothing, because he was a Jew.
Okay, we're going to bring that up. I do see that for his heroism and the fact that he was wounded, so he did receive the Purple Heart and a Distinguished Service Cross for Battlefield Valor in December 29th, 1919, which is 6 weeks after World War One was over. So there was recognition of it.
Yes.
So
there was recognition of it because the Army could not deny the anti-Semitism was just tremendous in World War One, because there were so many children of immigrants, and it was not only the Jews, it was the Italians, it was the Irish, and of course African Americans had it worse. They weren't even allowed to fight next to white. They were sent to the French troops. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm. Here are American citizens that weren't allowed to fight side by side with white people. But in this case, there were too many people that saw my father's action. They had to give him something. Now, if none of this was reported, they would have given him nothing as a Jew. Mm-hmm. Nothing. That has happened over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
He did get the Distinguished Service Cross. He was very satisfied with that. I had, the story is that, you know, I was sitting on the porch. It's not the story, it's what happened, with a dear friend of my father's. Jim Pritchard is his name. He was a big, very handsome Irish cop. He was one of the men that my father saved. And the two of them were the dearest of the dearest friends, and they continued their relationship for years and years after the war. And he would come to visit. We were in the greenhouse and nursery business, so he would come and spend weekends with my father and all of us. And the two of them would disappear into the greenhouses and just be able to talk about what happened. That was the only time that each of them, because Jim Pritchard was in the same platoon that my father was. And one day I was on the porch visiting with Jim, just a wonderful gentleman. I was about 12 years old, and he said to me that, you know, you're old enough now to understand this. I just want you to know I was there. I was one of the ones that your father saved. And because he was a Jew, he never got the medal that he deserved. He really deserved the Medal of Honor. So I went back to my father and I said, is this true? And my father said, yes, it's true. He said, but anti-Semitism was a way of life. That's what he said. It was a way of life. He said, but this is not about medals. It never was about medals. I'm honored and satisfied to receive our nation's second highest award, which was the Distinguished Service Cross. End of conversation. I never really brought it up again because it was very painful for him to discuss. And since he made it very clear, you know, where he stood on this, that was it. But I read the citation, and it seemed so much above and beyond and so amazing that I, even as a child, I made the mental note that just didn't seem right. Also, with anti-Semitism, my father was a big guy. In those days, 5'10 and a half, 190 of solid muscle was considered a big guy. He also was a boxer and a wrestler. He was a long-distance swimmer. He played semi-pro baseball. And at Syracuse, after the war was over, those that were wounded were given a GI Bill, but you had to be wounded in World War One to be able to get a GI Bill. So he went to Syracuse University, and there he played varsity football and lacrosse. So anybody that would engage my father, with some anti-Semitism, you would almost feel sorry for that person because there would be very little left of him. So of the person that tried to engage my father, you should have seen him in action. He was tremendous.
Okay.
Is that the law?
Got it. Yeah. So if you're just joining in, our guest is Elsie Sherman Roth. Her father recently, beginning of the month, received the nation's highest award, the Medal of Honor, from President Obama for the U.S. Army and of the United States. Did your father display the medals that he did receive, the cross
Medal of Valor? Indeed. They were on our walls, all of them. I mean, there were so many other medals that were given, too, because he fought in France, and at such a high level, he had the Legion of Honor, which was a wonderful recognition from France. And by the way, I guess for the 50th anniversary of World War One, the 4th Division, which is where my father fought, my father was asked to represent the 4th Division to go back to France and place a wreath on a major memorial that was there. There were pictures of him still standing straight and tall, crippled that he was. It was a beautiful honor. My father also was very active in veterans affairs, realizing how difficult it was to make the transition, from seeing so much at such a young age, that he was constantly helping veterans find jobs. Those that needed medical help, he would pick them up and take them personally to doctors and specialists. This was just a way of life. He also, because in the 30s, the Bund was very active near where we lived, and there were fights. My father and his friends would go to these Bund meetings. They were horribly anti-Semitic, and they were just fist fights. I remember my father coming home bloody. I mean, it was so frightening for us children to see that. He then formed a post for the Jewish war veterans. I remember it, even him. I'm 86 years old, and I remember Post 226 in the Bronx, founded by my father, so that all of these men from World War, Jewish men from World War One, could get together as a group, as a military group, and confront these Bundists and Father Coughlin, and indeed they did.
Mm-hmm.
So he continued. He was always a veteran. I mean, he was always a proud soldier. To the day he died, he was erect and tall and a very proud soldier.
Mm-hmm. But he never wanted to pursue getting the Medal of Valor.
No.
Is that correct?
No, it was never brought up. I was the one that brought it up. Definitely not. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't as if, you know, we had conversations that you deserve the Medal of Honor. We really want to pursue this. He would always come back, and I could see, this is not, you don't fight for your country for a bunch of medals. You fight because you care about this, our country, very much, and you're willing to put your life on the line as he did. That's what it was about. But I felt, as a Jew, and from the research that I did, and from Jim Pritchard, who directly told me this. This was one of the three men there that said that my father saved his life, and Jim knew what he did. He watched the platoon be saved. He knew the other two men that were saved. And by the way, we just found, from all the publicity about this, this went all over the world. It went viral. Guess what? We got a call from the Pritchard family. which was just so amazing. And for 2.5 hours, we spoke together. And Jim's son, who is my age now, said that the Shemin name has been a household name forever, and they are in debt to my father forever. Mm. And I'm talking about my recollection of Jim. Our family just loved him so much. Jim gathered his whole family from age 8 years, I guess a great-grandson, to other siblings. And you know what they did, Rabbi? When we were about to ring off after talking about various things that I remembered and what they remembered about my father, they all said, this little voice came on and said, thank you for my life. And the next one would say, thank you for my life. And then the next one would say, thank you for my life. There were 15 of them there that thanked me because of my father saving Jim for their lives. I just, you know, it was so touching to hear that. So we have the Pritchard family back with us again, and how wonderful is that, too?
Mm, you've left the rabbi speechless. Anyway, so your father passed away in 1973.
Yes.
And never did get the Medal of Valor and was not interested in pursuing it. So tell us, fill in the details between 1973 and 2015, please, Elsie.
Well, I always looked for something, and there was nothing out there that I could gather to, you know, I had all of this information, all this backup material.
Let me interrupt you just very quickly. Were your sibs involved with this also, your brother and sister?
No, I was the only one. Because I left the New York area. I married a Cincinnatian, so I moved to Cincinnati. And then from Cincinnati to St. Louis. I've been in St. Louis 50-some-odd years. But I've always looked for, I always felt this was a great injustice. I knew also from my research and talking to people that knew the climate of World War I, that this anti-Semitism was a horrendous thing. I knew what my father's citation was. I compared it to other Distinguished Service Cross citations. And my father's rose so far above the others. And my father also directly said, yes, there was anti-Semitism, but I took care of business. That's it. I took care of business. Let's move on with this. But anyway, there was the World War II Leonard Kravitz Veterans Act came out in 2002. And their Jewish veterans had an opportunity to get that felt that there was anti-Semitism in any of the citations they had, or if they deserved the citation and didn't get it because they were Jews. It was open for 1 year. You could bring your credentials and have a real congressional review. Guess what? I jumped on that like you wouldn't believe. But guess what, Rabbi? They turned me away because this is World War II. I was so horrified. I said, what is the difference in discrimination between World War I, World War II? I mean, the French, and who cares? Discrimination is disgusting at any time. They could never give me an answer. Never, never give me an answer. So here, again, I was back to square one because I was discrimination in World War I, and still no answer anywhere. Well, I called the Jewish War Veterans, and they really weren't all that helpful to see, do you have connections? What can you do? But they did give me a gift. They gave me Colonel Erwin Burtnick, who is a real advocate for veterans, and he also knew what the climate was in World War I. He's an expert, and he's an expert in medals and citations, and he called me. And he said, well, they told me at the headquarters here that you needed some help. Let me see what this is about. Send me the citation. I sent it. He calls me back in 2 minutes, and he says, I've reviewed 200 of these. None has reached the level of the Medal of Honor or even the Distinguished Service Cross. This is Medal of Honor. And so he said, what you need to do now is go to your congressman. I did go to my congressman, the big ones, and they all either never returned calls, whatever. But I was living in this little town in Labadie, Missouri, And my congressman was there. I decided to try him. And he read the citation, and he spoke with Erwin Burtnick, and he said, I'm going to do this. And so that's Blaine Luchtmeyer, my congressman. So between the two of them, well, it was 8 years up to the point of Burtnick going nowhere. Then 5 years with the help of Colonel Burtnick and Blaine Luchtmeyer, my congressman, and myself, 13 years of working with my congressman. We had a bill that we opened it again for World War One, and it was named after my father. It was the William Sherman World War One Veterans Act that now opened it up for anyone in World War One that wanted congressional review. That was the only way that we could get this done, to have my father's. We attached it to a defense bill that we knew would sail right through, and that's exactly what happened. The defense bill sailed through, and my father's bill was attached to it, and it was a done deed. Now we had to get the serious review. So we were reviewed three times to be vetted each time it passed. Then we were reviewed by the Secretary of the Army. It passed. Then we were reviewed by the Secretary of Defense. It passed. And then it sat on the President's desk. And the President also would review it. This took 5 years to do. Watching, pushing, why aren't you paying attention? It's been there 8 months and it's not going anywhere. You know, all that. That's what it took. It took weekly pushing to get this job done. And in the speech that I gave at the Pentagon, they asked me to speak, as they did ask the representative for Private Henry Johnson, an African-American. We both got the Medals of Honor posthumously, side by side. Is that amazing? One a Jew. One is anti-Semitism, the other is racism.
Mm-hmm.
And there we were, side by side. How beautiful that was. And he had Charles Schumer working on this for him, too. And it's been a long, hard struggle. But it's done. It's done with both of us. And the Army has bent over backwards to take responsibility for this. In fact, I've been invited to West Point to talk to the young men and women that will be officers, so that I can tell my story and they can remember that the minute they see anti-Semitism anywhere, they're going to crush it. They're going to finish it right then and there.
Hopefully.
And the Army wants me to do this, and
that's
I'm honored
awesome.
To do it.
Do you feel your father has been vindicated now?
Yes. Oh, most definitely. You know, Rabbi, I have 11 words here that tell the story. This is it. Discrimination hurts. A wrong has been made right. All is forgiven.
That's very good.
That virtually is the whole story in 11 words.
Okay. Can I ask you, where do you have the medal now?
The medal is sitting right here. I'm in my kitchen, and it's in its box, and it's going to be taken to the Federation Building here for the Jewish community to see it. And then I have all kinds of veterans groups all over that want to see it, and I'll be doing a lot of speaking engagements on behalf of my father and this story. And as I said, this story can only happen in America. Only in America could this story happen. 13 years later of my own fight, and 97 years later, my father would receive the Medal of Honor. And truly, it's such an honor.
Indeed. Okay, that's going to wrap us up. We want to thank you for coming on and sharing this, and I hope that our listeners feel as inspired and moved as I am, and wish you continued success, and let us know if you're going to be dropping by our neighborhood in Detroit anytime soon.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. I appreciate the opportunity to share this momentous experience with all of you and your listeners in Detroit and wherever.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting me very much.
That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Stop paying more than your fair share of property tax now. I'm Stephen Poulter, attorney at law and president of Express Property Tax Appeals. Right now, your commercial property tax assessments are in the mail. Like many commercial property owners, you're probably paying unnecessary and exorbitant property taxes, potentially costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars every year. Express Property Tax Appeals can help. I recently reduced one of my clients' property tax values by $2 million, realizing $250,000 in real tax dollar savings. I can do the same for you. If you're a commercial property owner, manager, or broker and are tired of paying more than your fair share of property tax, call Express Property Tax Appeals now at 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. That's 855-LOW-TAX-9 or online at lowtax9.com. You have nothing to lose except your looming property tax burden. I'm Stephen Poulter with Express Property Tax Appeals, and I look forward to saving you money on your property taxes.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We want to welcome Mr. Stephen Rabbi, actually Stephen Poulter of Express Property Tax Appeals to the family of Jewish Hour sponsors. Your property tax is too high? This is the man. Give him a call at 1-855-LOW-TAX-9. Go to lowtax9.com and start paying less money. Or, as the case usually is when you're not paying money for something that you don't want to pay money for, you usually wind up paying money for things you want to pay for. So which would you rather pay money for? Things you don't want to pay for or things you do want to pay for? Hey, it's a no-brainer. Express Property Tax Appeals, Low Tax 9. We are moving into the musical segment of our show. This is a redo by Gad Elbaz. Everyone knows about Gad Elbaz if you're listening to Israeli music. He had a hit song called Hashem Melech, and he redid it together with a black rapper who recently became Jewish, whose name is Nissen Black. And so this is the rendition of Hashem Melech with Gad Elbaz and Nissen Black.
I feel the cold in the rain. I wanna get up and leave it. Everything's always the same. I wanna get up and leave. Now we're standing here, and the night's so clear, like the shine upon your crown. Yeah, we're up so high in the midnight sky, and we'll never come back, come back down. Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, our father, King David's rock, your honor. We get our lot the stronger, we claim you drop the blessing like the bracha. Success, slava. The world is yours, you offer it to whomever calls you.
Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Imlo.
With all of our soul, the Kleeper is fighting. We know we rage in a war. We won't let him go. Even if the world don't turn, the fire will burn. The Ishtami, a korban, some sacrifice. Yeah, put H on me. We clapping loud, screaming loud. We're gonna take the crown, bring it back straight to the king. Then we bow, Malchut complete. Yep. Pick up a mitzvah, lay down the hate. Olam Haba or Olam Hazeh. The feeling is great. What we can say? Praise Hashem, His
now
name is great.
Like the shine upon your crown. Yeah, we're up so high in the midnight sky.
assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shulman, here you're listening to The Jewish Hour. Last Wednesday was UN-declared International Holocaust Remembrance Day, and there was a song which was composed in honor of it. We have Dudu Fisher, everybody knows about him, singing The Last Survivor.
The last, the very last survivor, and his soul was tired and worn. He was the last survivor. And his brothers dead and gone. So many painful memories of remnants he remained. His heart filled with sadness as the final journey came. Who will tell the story? Who will light the flame? Who will bear our legacy of pain? How much we suffer, the last, the very last survivor, still fought for life in vain. His spirit sighed with sorrow as the angels called his name. And his sisters in tragedy from the ghettos, from the forests, now back
someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour, and up for your listening pleasure next. This is Cantor Michael Smolesh and Cantor Neil Michaels of Detroit's own Temple Israel. They've recorded, it was written by Michael Smolesh, and it was done very well. The song is called Ani Amarti, which is taken from a verse from Psalms. If you're interested in procuring this specific song, they did not put it on CD, but it's available at cdbaby.com/Temple Israel, and you can download it for free. So this is the two cantors singing Ani Amarti.
אני אמרתי אלוקים אתם ובני עליון כולכם אני אמרתי אלוקים אתם ובני עליון כולכם אני אמרתי אלוקים אתם Elohim atem uvenei yon kulkem Ayyamam amam aydai dai aydai dai yamam 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 Elohim atem, uvenei yon kulkem. Ani amati, Elohim atem, uvenei yon kulkem. Ani amati, Elohim atem, uvenei yon kulkem.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Mishpatim. It can be found in the book of Exodus in chapter 21 and following. There is a list of about 40 commandments or so in this week's portion. That takes up the brunt of the portion. At the end of the portion, there is a discussion of the true biblical borders of Israel, which you can say that's a little bit of a story, but not much. There's a cause to analyze the juxtaposition of this week's portion with last week's portion. The end of last week's portion, the Jews were given the Torah on Sinai with much pomp and circumstance and fire and thunder and lightning and voices, and the Jews were going out of their boxes, you might say. Yes. Total flip out. In this week's portion, we get things like you should have fair weights and measures. You should be kind to your slaves. Yes, we can talk about slavery another time in the Bible. But you have to be kind to your slaves. You have to lend people money when they need to borrow money from you. These type of things. These mitzvahs were all placed near the giving of the Torah as an indication that just as you should believe in God and not worship idols and not take God's name in vain and keep the Shabbos, etc., 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 are of magnanimous importance, because those are the big ten. These also, even though if you're a nice person, you're going to not steal, you're going to have fair weights and measures. You don't need a Bible to tell you not to do that. You know it's wrong. But when we say a Jew doesn't steal, a Jew doesn't steal because he believes it's wrong. A Jew doesn't steal because it says so in the Bible. Don't steal. We see, for example, the commandments, don't murder, which is in the Big Ten, yes. In Nazi Germany, murder was always a punishable offense. I don't think they have the death penalty, but they would lock people up for committing murder. Even from the years 1938 to 1946, murder was still a punishable offense. But what did they do? They redefined what murder is to exclude Jews, gypsies, Slavs, blacks, eventually probably Orientals, and everybody else who wasn't white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, or Germanic Protestant as the case may be. That's what happens if you're allowing it to go on your own. That I understand I shouldn't do this. Now I understand I should do it. Morals can change. Times change. 40 years ago, if you would have told me that there are places in America where you can actually sit down in a store and light up a joint and nobody says anything, I would say no, impossible. But here it is, because morals changed. 40 years ago, 50 years ago, that was considered and deemed wrong. Now, nothing wrong. In Judaism, what was wrong 3,300 years ago is still wrong in the year 2016. And what was correct and proper 3,300 years ago in the year 2016 is still correct and proper. I want to speak very quickly about the boundary things at the end of chapter 24, where Moses is told what the boundaries were. And these boundaries, the Jews never settled this population because it says that we're not going to be able to do it all at once. It's too big of an area to maintain infrastructure. We're talking about the western border being the Mediterranean Sea, understood, at the natural border, including all the islands in it, like Crete and Rhodes and Cyprus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Malta. The eastern border is the Persian Gulf. The northern border is the Tigris River in Turkey. And the southern border is the Nile River. Obviously, the Jews never got that. So when we're talking about what is Israel, never mind West Bank, East Bank. That's really ours. We are running out of time very fastly and very quickly. We need to take a quick commercial break, so don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to rabbifinman.com. You'll find archived editions of the show, archived editions of the E-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, and U-Parsha, which are yours truly conveying messages and insights into something Jewish and in educational and hopefully entertaining way. You'll also find classes there. You'll also find the donations page. Last day of January, we still need to pay for January. This is it. Step up to the plate. Go to the donations page. Whatever it happens to be, it's so easy. Some people actually this week actually signed up and made it monthly. One person, $5 a month. Thank you very much. That's $60. That's wonderful. Go do it, rabbifinman.com. Tonight marks the anniversary of the passing of the Rebbe's wife, Rebbe Simchana Chaya Mushke Schneerson. She was a very private person. We don't know a whole lot about her. And most of the stories that we do know about her in her later life came from her driver, her attaché, her valet, however you'd like to call him, Mr. Rabbi Chesed Halberstam. So it happened once that it happened frequently that he would take her, the Rebbe's in, would like to go down to Brighton Beach and look at the ocean. And it once happened that they're driving through Brighton Beach, and there was a detour, there was construction, they couldn't go the regular way. And suddenly, they're like sitting at a stoplight, and they hear this woman yelling in Russian. There's a lot of Russian Jews in Brighton Beach. So she asked the driver, go find out what's happening. She said, there's a woman who's getting evicted because she hasn't paid her rent. She said, really? She said, go ask the marshal how much do they want. And the marshal came back and said something like it was like $3,500 or something. This is, you're talking the 1980s. So she took out her checkbook and she wrote the check and gave it to, said, give this to the marshals. As they drove away, the Rebbetzin said, when something unusual happens out of the ordinary, like, for example, you have to go on a detour, and then you're put in a position where you see that you can help another person, it is by divine providence that you were redirected to that other place and you should take full advantage of it. That is going to do it for the show. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. And we hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
We בצעדייך לברי מתרגשת ואני מחכה שתאחזי בשתי ידיי מהלכת לצידי ומבטיי בך לא פוסקים תמיד אזכור דבר או שניים מהיום